7:38 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. And joining me here in studio, as he typically does on a Tuesday, when schedules work. And we actually had a double. We almost thought it wasn't going to work. We both had other things that had come up. And then all of a sudden, the sheriff is here. So it's good news. Sheriff Simmons, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing good. Let's start with probably the most unpleasant from your agency's point of view story. This is the kind of stuff you have to deal with sometimes. You have a deputy that you had to terminate over some child cruelty allegations. Is that right?
Yeah, we got a report that there were some mistreatment of some of the children of one of our former deputies, I'm proud to say. And when we did the investigation, we determined that we had probable cause to believe that he committed a child cruelty, child neglect, and then failure to require school attendance, which is a homeschool type environment.
Okay.
So we arrested him and his wife also. So, you know, we don't tolerate that from anyone, and we certainly don't tolerate that from deputies. So I fired him immediately.
Can I just pause for a second, because it's stuck in my head, because we're homeschoolers, right?
Mm-hmm.
You say it was a homeschool,
right?
But it was a truancy thing as well, like they claimed to be homeschooling but weren't actually doing it or something, or?
Right? There are still some requirements in homeschool,
sure,
that you have to get,
yeah,
you know, to get completion, and they weren't doing that.
Okay.
There was some what we believe was mistreatment, you know, some dental needs and some different things that we felt like they weren't. They weren't doing.
So this is a variation on parental neglect of some sort, parental abuse of some sort. That
I think it boils down to you have a duty to care for your children,
yeah,
in a responsible way. And while we understand and we will take into account, people have differences of opinion. Some people choose to homeschool. Some people, mm-hmm, choose not to vaccinate. Two vaccines. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about what we felt like was a violation of the law.
And this is, you know, not to get too deep on all this, but this is a case where this individual was otherwise a good officer, just this came to light, or, I mean, you know, we know that can happen, but.
Right, yeah, there's been no discipline issues with,
okay,
this particular deputy, no. He,
okay,
was working assigned to the courthouse.
But obviously, you're not going to, as you say, not going to tolerate that on the force, obviously, so. Had a couple of incidents that took place. This is one that it was a little while ago, but I had wanted to talk with you about this. Your officers, your deputies had come in to clean up Jones Swamp. A lot of people were squatting. Homeless people were kind of camping out in there. And that had been an ongoing activity in partnership with the county and code enforcement, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
And the owners of the property.
And the owners,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Area Housing Commission owns the property.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've long said, if you own a piece of property and you want someone off, you can call us and we will remove them. The issue,
I mean, that's just trespassing.
That's trespassing, yeah. It's like you call me to your house and maybe, well, I wouldn't call me, but I'll certainly help out if I can. But if you have someone on your property that you want removed, then we will remove them. And so we had a meeting with county officials, code enforcement officials, had meetings with area housing, and it was clear that they wanted these people off. So they identified those who had been there for a long period of time, mm-hmm, that were, I guess you call them squatters, but they felt like they had to go through the court system, and we all agreed that if you go through the court system, get them an eviction notice, we will certainly be there and we'll take care of it. So notices were given, a couple of days advance notice. There were notices posted, made contact with these people, and told them when we were going to be there. And fortunately, they all left and we didn't have to make any arrests.
Okay, so I'm just to be clear, this was not in structures per se. This was on, like, in Jones Swamp. I mean, it was
it's in the woods
area. Okay.
Yeah, well, it was makeshift structures, but it was,
gotcha,
it was in the woods.
Okay.
When
you said eviction
people,
notices, I wasn't sure. It,
right,
wasn't,
but
like
we felt like
housing,
because they had allowed them to stay there for so long, they had knowledge of them being there.
Okay.
They were actually giving them, you know, food and that sort of thing.
Okay.
That you should have
a legal process,
the court system, and get them the notices. And again, it made it cleaner and easier for all of us. And it certainly was easier, and it did work.
How does that work in Florida? I know every state's a little bit different, but, you know, if you stay in a place long enough, eventually you start to acquire, you know, residency rights just by term of occupation, even if you don't own the structure, even if you don't own the land. How does that work? Because I really don't know.
It is very tricky. It requires a lot of assessment on the owners and law enforcement's part. we had a lot of conversations with these extended stay hotels about how long is too long, and we look at things like, do you get mail there, and you know, are you, have you established a residence there? Do you claim that as your residence on employment records and that sort of thing?
Yeah.
But for the most part, if you allow someone to stay, certainly maybe a former renter was renting a room from you, and then they chose not to rent, not to pay rent anymore, you have to go through the eviction notice to get them out, much like property owners would on renters. And it's really that simple. If they are allowed to stay there and are given certain, you know, rights of ownership, of occupancy, I should say, then yeah, you need to get them, go through the courts and get them evicted. It takes, I don't know how much it costs. I don't think it's very much. I mean, it does take a couple of days. We get the notices. We go and post it on their door, and usually we give them 3 days to vacate.
So the more you treat them as if they are allowed to be there, the more you have to go through a process in order to remove them. Basically.
That's correct. We had one recently where some people were, I think the homeowner passed away and the children were there, and the children wanted someone that was in the back, an outlying building that the previous owner, you know, had let them stay in. And we went through a lot of problems with that. But ultimately, we had to determine who owns the property now and then who has the right to get them to leave and get this eviction notice.
We also had last Tuesday, I believe, there was somewhat minor, but gunfire involved in a road rage incident, right?
Yeah, as I understand it, someone cut one person off, and then an individual came out of their car and fired a gun and shot the tire out, and I think shot a couple of rounds into the vehicle.
Oh, so, God.
Luckily, no one was injured, no one was hurt, but again, it's just crazy that someone would do that. That would think to do that over a cut off somebody or a perceived slight on the roadway.
This is maybe a bit of a side note here, but it's the kind of thing that people might have a misconception about. You watch TV and people hide behind their cars in a gunfight. Car's not going to do a lot to stop a bullet typically. So you firing into another car is very, very, very dangerous.
And that's what we call it. There's a statute called firing deadly missiles into an occupied vehicle. That's how dangerous it could be. My understanding is he was firing at the tire and then he hit around the tire. So he hit the fender well.
Okay, gotcha.
Otherwise, we probably would have charged, or we would have termed this as an attempted homicide or an aggravated assault at least. So if you try to shoot into a car while someone's in it, we're going to charge you with attempt. You could try to kill somebody.
Right.
Like you just said, the window clearly will not stop a bullet. And the door frames now,
I don't think
the metal's made near what it used to be. And the rounds that people fire now are have a little more penetrating power.
Blunt Street, I think we had a stabbing. Two people maybe were at a hospital as a result of it.
Yeah, I talked to the investigators yesterday, and they just couldn't believe what happened here. This was a disturbance of some sort, and then a man went, retrieved a knife and came back and attacked one from behind, as I understand it.
Oh, God.
Cut him twice around the neck area, and then there were people trying to break it up, trying to hold him back, and one of a female got stabbed as well. So clearly intended to do great bodily harm or death to these two individuals. So we're again, charging him with the attempted murder. And again, as I talked to the investigators, they're like, this guy clearly tried to kill them. Or we believe he tried to kill these two people.
Well, good for the bystanders for getting involved. I mean, that's a scary situation in trying to protect somebody. I mean, that's, you know, good civics, but scary because, you know, a knife fight is a knife fight, you know?
Yeah. Knife fights aren't as common as they were in 1800, I guess.
Yeah.
But we still have them occasionally. And just how horrific would that be? You find yourself, you know, being attacked or stabbed by an individual, not just stabbed but cut. I mean, the cuts were there were stab wounds, obviously, but there were also some
well, hospitalization, right? Life threatening.
Oh, absolutely, hospitalization.
Hey, I had wanted to also ask you. We talked with Sheriff Johnson about this a little bit yesterday, but you know, you and I have talked many times about the assassination attempt on President Trump, Secret Service. I was dumbfounded to watch the Secret Service hearing last week where he clearly was blaming the SWAT team for actually doing what they had been told to do. He's changed his tone a little bit on Saturday at a briefing where he said, I'm not blaming local law enforcement. But look, President Trump is going to come here most likely for some kind of a rally. Maybe, you know, Vice President Harris comes here for a rally. You guys are going to have to work with Secret Service again in the future. What do comments like that do for your officers' willingness to work with them and your agency being willing to work with them if they get thrown under the bus like that?
Yeah, first of all, getting thrown under the bus ain't cool. Yeah, that's not the way it should be. I think that what you have to realize, or what I understand, is that typically no one comes into our counties, our locations, and tells us how to do a SWAT thing. But we also understand that a dignitary of this nature, certainly a presidential candidate or the president, we also have to work with the Secret Service. I've talked to you before about all the planning that goes in with the advanced teams and then the teams that come later. And we need to know where they're going to be. Are you going to be on this building? And they'll say, yeah, we'll take care of this one, but our holes are here, here, and here. And then we, as a partner, will say, okay, we'll take care of those particular holes. But to blame local law enforcement in that scenario, if they come in here and say, we only have holes here and here, and if y'all could cover that, and if we cover that, then we're good. But if you screw it up on the beginning, or you're not clear on what your plans are, that's on you, mister. There's no – don't look at us and point fingers at us. I would imagine that their security is enhanced, obviously. And I imagine that the protocols that they had in place before, the cooperation that they've had in the past, is probably even enhanced, because a lot more questions probably being asked by the locals, so there is no miscommunication on all this stuff. I was talking to a former sheriff, and they talked about it too, about how much money it costs locals for, and I limit this as well, that there are they come into town, they visit, they require all this extra overtime and stuff, they don't pay you a dime. And you know, but the thing is, I don't want nothing to happen on my watch, so right. We make sure we have the proper, what we think is a proper security. But again, we're not the ones that say, okay, we're going to take care of this, Secret Service. I want you to get back and stay in the room. We'll cover the president.
Yeah.
That's not, no one rational thinks that's the way it works out. We expect, and I expect, the Secret Service to have a take charge mentality of, we have to protect this guy. In fact, that's the way it's been.
Right.
Quite frankly, they have asked us to do things. I'm like, do you really need that? But if you want it, we'll go ahead and do it, because we don't want to be the ones that are at fault. So I find it surprising and shocking that the Secret Service would say, oh, the locals must have messed this up, because they have always been, if anything, they've been over protective about it, because they can.
Right.
They say, hey, again, we talked about it before, but the president it flew into NAS and went all the way to Civic Center. And they asked us to block every roadway from the Civic Center always to NAS and back. And that took a tremendous amount of manpower. And for hours before it started, we didn't want to do that. We didn't want to, but we did it because we thought, you know what, let's make sure that nothing happens. We don't want a Dallas situation.
You don't want any regret later.
Right. Yeah. And so we did it, and we made some people upset, you know, about the roadways being closed. But again, this is the president, and we did what we were asked to do.
Last thing is, it's not in our area, but we did have a deputy that was killed on Friday in an ambush at a home, three suspects in Lake County, Deputy Bradley Michael Link. And he's 28 years old and, you know, a hero. But it's a reminder of the dangers that your officers face, especially when, you know, the worry that you're getting called into a situation where you're the target instead of something else, you know?
There are so many opportunities that, quite frankly, that deputies and police officers can be targeted. I mean, because we go to so many calls. We handle 300,000+ calls for service a year. And you never know which one of those is going to be this type of a call. That scenario, as I understand it, was a disturbance. And then when it got to that disturbance, they pointed him to a different house. And then when it went to that different house, they noticed there was a door kicked in, that sort of thing. So they did what you would expect. You know, you hear a disturbance going on. You see a door kicked in. Someone sounds like they're in distress. I think that's a hard part about being in law enforcement. You have to determine whether you knock, do you wait, do you go inside,
right.
But, you know, and so you always err on the side of saving lives, and they did their job. They did that to a hail of gunfire, and it's just, I guess when the details come out, we'll know a little bit more, but listening to the sheriff in Lake County talking about it, obviously it's a very, very raw and very sensitive situation, because they lost one of their deputies and two others were hospitalized with serious injuries. And they're still piecing that together. So the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, as they do here, is looking into that officer-involved shooting, and it's just going to be I'm a great interest to me, because we always take these situations.
They're
and
learning
we're trained
opportunities,
with,
right?
With those, and we say, okay, what if this were to happen here? What could you have done? And there may not be anything you could do, because the job itself is dangerous, and you put yourself in harm's way every day.
I said last, but there is actually one. Do you have any deputies that you deployed for the hurricane, sent over for the storms, either ahead of or after the fact? Anybody go from the Scammy Sheriff's Office for Debbie?
No, the way this works is the state EOC requests people's assistance. They put out feelers and requests, does anyone have this particular thing? So, and if we don't, we don't get reimbursed for that. So, and what you don't want is for people to just show up.
Right.
And know, we know where to go, we know where to work. Yeah. We've had that back in Ivan. We had people just showing up, and we were like, I don't know what you're...
Why are you here?
We're doing here. We can't feed you. There's 50 people here. We can't house you. Yeah. We can't feed you, and we have no job for you to do. But the bottom line is we haven't been requested yet, and at this point, it doesn't look like we're going to be requested. It was a Category 1. I'm not saying making light of it. We've been through plenty of Category 1s, and you suffer through those. But we have not yet been requested. But anytime the state EOC requests our assistance, we will go.
Very good. Chip Simmons is the sheriff for Escambia County. Always stops by on a Tuesday and helps keep us informed. Thank you so much for the time. Thanks for doing what you do to keep us safe, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
You bet. Y'all take care.